looking forward to wasting no time at all because there's a ton of football this weekend. You like hearing about football, and our next guest knows a lot about football. It's a perfect combination. Sean Salisbury joining us now on KHDK. Sean, no Dave today. It's just Nate and Katie, but thanks for bearing with us anyway.
You're welcome for that, by the way.
Yeah, thank you guys for hearing me. It's good to hear you too. No, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, we figured we could turn Katie loose and, you know, that'd be it. I could just
turn
sit back.
Turn me loose. Put on your helmet and your pads, man. Be careful.
Sean, I want to start. Yeah, that's what I say every morning too. Sean, I want to start with the Raiders, man. They, you know, again, preseason week one, but they won 31-10. I thought they had a solid defensive effort on what was a 73-yard drive. They ended up turning it into just three for the Cardinals, and you got a fourth-string running back looking good. When you're a team like the Raiders that has these huge expectations, how do you go into your preseason, especially week one? You know who your starters are for the most part. What's the strategy there?
I think it's important to find out the depth of a football team in preseason, and you're exactly right. And in truth, guys, most teams go into preseason knowing, let's say there's a, you know, with the 53-man roster, 45 on the roster, and a practice squad. Most teams know maybe all but four guys that are going to be on their roster unless something goes crazy and there's an injury. Then there's two guys that are, they think should make it because they were drafted or in the fourth or fifth round and want to make it, because they want to make sure that they have a chance for growth, or that they make sure that their scouting department isn't bad, and so they have that. And then there's two guys that are kind of hanging out there that have to play great and beat a veteran out or beat another guy out. That's the way it is. It's not – this isn't like, you know, in college football where you have turnover and 22 guys leave and they bring another 22 guys in and that there are 75 guys on scholarship. The truth is they know pretty much from OTAs the majority of their roster. So – what you're trying to find out in preseason, in my mind, is one, to get your starters enough work to where they're game ready, but I don't need to see much of them, two or three series. So I see the rhythm of the offense and see that the five guys up front are moving, that they're in unison on the offensive line, that Carr gets in shape, that, you know, that the running game understands how to blitz pickup, those things. But I'm also letting, and you want to win. Heck, you know what the truth is? I'm not so sure I care about winning with the number ones. I want them to win their series. Not necessarily the score on the scoreboard. I want them to win their series and win their third down matchups. I'm looking for the little things if I'm a coach. Is it third and one? How physical are we in the run game on third and one? Are we a team that jumps off sides and gets pushed around the line of scrimmage? On first and ten, are we a team that can get 5 or 6 yards? But I also want to see how my backups do. I want to see how they close out a game, because they're not used to, on the NFL level, being in pressure situations at the end of a game. They're just not. It's usually your number ones unless somebody got hurt. So I want to see the depth of my team, because in truth, guys, and you know this, by the end of the season, no roster plays all its starters that it started with at the beginning. So you start to look around and say, okay, can Dak Prescott be my backup now after a good performance? Do I need a veteran if you're in Dallas? You look at Oakland and say, okay, is the depth of my running game really good? In Arizona, you say, we know our starting roster. The question is my backup corner good enough to be a nickelback? So those are the – I'm looking for the little things if I'm a coach inside the game. And then just rhythm and how we pick out. Your Houston last night, how did Brock Osweiler get in the rhythm? Lamar Miller averaging, what, 6-7 yards a carry. Feel pretty good about that. So you go around the league, you know, with a team like the Raiders who pretty much know their starters, you're looking for the depth of your football team, because in the end – it could be the backup quarterback for two games, your right defensive end. It could be your middle linebacker. That if those guys miss two games, your starters, that'll be the difference in winning the division and missing the playoffs, or winning the division and having a bye week. Those two or three losses throughout the season because a backup didn't do his job could end up being the difference.
Sean, I'm curious. We saw some good stuff from George Atkinson III. We talked about him earlier on the show, but I actually wanted to ask you about DeAndre Washington, who had a pretty good game in the sense that, you know, he had a nice little 25-yard run. He also broke loose on a 32-yard reception. What did you see from him specifically?
I think that versatility matters to me. It's so weird to ask that, because when I'm watching him, I'm also looking – at that other teams. I'm not just looking for, can you run when the hole's, you know, for instance, a receiver. Can you catch the ball in traffic, in between the numbers? anybody can operate outside the numbers where you're just running straight, you catch it, step out of bounds. I'm looking for a guy when I'm looking for a young receiver. How do you operate inside the hash marks when you're running over the middle when you know there's somebody there? Same with a running back. When the hole's open, how quickly do you get through it, and how quickly do you hit it quick, get through it while it's open and closed? Does it take a while? Does the line need to hold the block longer? But I'm also looking for a back. How do you catch the ball out of the backfield? How do you catch it when you're coming down the backfield on a screen pass or an option, but also in blitz pickup and who you're supposed to block? So there's little things, and I think what you see if you're Jack or if you're any coach in that situation, you get to see the depth of the fact that the guy's nobody. That's why you look at Tennessee and you say, DeMarco Murray, why would you draft Derrick Henry in the second round? Because you know what? They know it's going to be tough to sustain running with a running back that long all season long who's a pounded guy in Murray, but you also got another guy. So now between the two, you pop in 30-some carries, you're in pretty good rhythm for a team that needs physicality. So when you see what you saw from Washington, you get a chance to see versatility. I can deploy him in different ways. And I'm always looking for ways to formation teams to death. I don't just want to line up and be in the same place. I like it. So once I – it's like – think back when Marshall Faulk, and I'm not comparing him to that at all. Don't misunderstand me, LaDainian Tomlinson. When you left the line of scrimmage, when you broke the huddle, I could line him up at wide receiver. I could line him up in the backfield. I could motion him to the slot. You put a defense in a tremendous bind when you can create matchup problems. That's why a position like the tight end position has become so valuable as well. The tight end position, because we can flex them out. They're three-down players now. When I played, you used to have them two downs, and you bring in a third or fourth wide receiver on third down. So the versatility of the guy who can carry the ball out of the backfield and catch it is a big advantage.
Sean Salisbury is joining us on KHK. You mentioned something there that kind of made me curious, so I'm going to get a little insight for some of our listeners here. But you talk about, we call formation effing guys. You like the formation guys to death. I'm curious how often teams, and maybe it's different between coaches, but how often, they'll run, say, a run play, run the same run play, but just run, six or seven different formations throughout the game to give them a different look, as opposed to actually literally running a completely different play.
Well, I think that is a wonderful question. And I try to tell I almost lived off this when I talked to young somebody will call me into the high school, or somebody will call me in and say, well, I've gone to a couple of colleges in Texas A&M, and they talk about formations and their quarterbacks. And I said, listen, when we got back on the 49ers, and you guys up there in Northern California understand this, that when the 49ers, when Walsh was in winning Super Bowls, and the Dallas Cowboys in the 90s, they may have had a library and training camp of 500, 600 plays, because having Denny Green, who was one of those who was a San Francisco pupil, and he coached Jerry Rice at wide receiver. We had a similar philosophy. And I can remember a time when Brian Billick, our coordinator, we lined up and ran 15 different formations in the first 15 plays of the game just to show the defense, and we probably ran them out of six different plays is all. The 49ers were great at that. You'd have Jerry running a slant and John Taylor running a flat route, and then you'd just change it where Jerry would motion and John Taylor would be inside. The same route, it just had different guy running the different route, and Tom Rathman in the flat, and Ma Joe hitting him in the flat. You run 15 different formations, but it's four different plays. It's not a lot of change. So you run a curl flat combination with six different formations. So I'm huge on that. I think that's a big part of preseason. I want to see how, and great coordinators do that early in a football game once the regular season starts. Let me throw 8, 9, 10, 12 different formations at them early. Doesn't have to be 15 different plays, different formations. I want to see how they adjust. So it doesn't really matter to the defense. It looks like you're so complicated. Oh, my gosh, why is this guy doing this? Their formation here. They flex and they trip out and then they motion and then they split out and all of a sudden they shift. But at the end of the day, we're still running curl flat on one side, seeing dig route on the backside with the back checking down or running a swing route. So that is a great – you create deception is what we're trying to do. I'm trying to let you think that I got 400 plays I called in a game, and in truth, I had 15 pass plays, 6 runs, and 40 different formations. But to you, it looked like I ran 80 different plays, and I think that's the genius of good coordinators. Keeping it simple. We don't need to – because the problem is you start to do too many plays, your own players don't know how to operate.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's only so much time in a week you can get it done, guys. So I'm big on the formations, and I think that's a great question.
Sean, well, don't give him too much credit over here. He's in here celebrating, Sean. When you said, we always celebrate for good question, but you said wonderful question, and that just took it just over the top for me. Absolutely.
Let's not go over what it was. Yeah.
Sean, before we get into what I'm sure will be 49ers next with my boy Nate over here, I wanted to ask you about something that Jim Irsay tweeted out before their preseason game to Colts fans, saying that, hey, you know, it's a long preseason. They've got two home games coming up in the next 2 weeks, and that's when Andrew Luck will make his first start instead of that night. And then he followed up with, like, yeah, there's some truth on this dark, rainy night that my good friend Rex has never heard of the word preseason. A little bit of trash talking there about Rex Ryan. Your take on that?
Well, it doesn't shock me, and Rex will smirk and come back with something. At some point, Rex will get a good dig in at some point. Now, listen, I know both of the guys. I'm a big Rex Ryan fan. I know Rex sometimes, to me, is too friendly with his players, so I wonder if they like him or they respect him. You know, there's a difference. But he's a hell of a football coach. The thing I do love about him, he's refreshing, is he and Rob both, they say what's on their mind. So I'm a huge... Rex Ryan was a guy I kind of like to play for because I think, man, he'd be pretty cool. Sometimes he's a little out of hand, but I love him, and I do. And I think if Buffalo stays healthy, they'll be better. That's beside the point. But he'll get his things in. But I also been on a team where Jim Irsay was in the front office, and Jim loves sports, loves it all. The problem with Jim is Jim's the guy, and it's weird. And can you think about this now? Picture Mr. Kraft in New England. Tweeting.
Oh, no.
just picture Greg Popovich sending a tweet. Picture, you know, Tom Landry, Art Rooney, Lamar Hunt. Hell, I'm not even sure Al Davis. Al probably wouldn't. I mean, and I love Mr. Davis. I grew up a diehard Raider fan. So technology was. I want to look. What the hell's Twitter? You know what I'm saying? So, it's always weird to me when I see an owner that runs a team. But you know darn well, if one of his players tweeted some of the things that Jim's tweeted, he'd go nuts.
Right.
That's the part I don't understand. We're asking. It'd be like the head coach that Nick Saban sending out some stupid tweet, or picture with him and eight sorority girls, and all of a sudden his player doing the same thing, and Nick suspending him for 2 days. Oh, never mind. Nick doesn't suspend his own players. My bad. But anyhow. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's crazy. Whenever I see an owner like that tweet out something that's not like thank you to the fans, if it's something odd, I'm like, dude, are you 12?
So,
you don't tweet the damn. Us three, Katie and me, we're supposed to be the tweeting, not the owner of the Colts. So it's just you got to go to it's what Jim does, and I think Jim's got rabbit ears. And I like him, but he's got rabbit ears. He hears everything and wants to get his little dig in. But Jim tweets like he's 16 years old as opposed to the owner of a football team.
So, Sean, just curious in your opinion, when you look at a guy like Mark Cuban, who gets loose on Twitter every, 20 seconds, does Mark Cuban get a pass on this as the only owner in professional sports?
Yeah, we give him a pass because Mark's a guy who almost is – we almost look at Mark like he's the guy who invented Twitter. You know what I mean? he's on the show that gives loans people money, and there's something about Mark, and I don't know why we do. It's like, hey, we give certain people hall passes. If one person standing at the national anthem with their hand over the heart, oh, they're a true American. If somebody got their hand by their side and arms folded, oh, that's terrible respect. You know how it goes.
Yeah,
we have selective criticism for who it is. Yeah, because Mark is that guy who'll get after the refs. He'll say something about an owner. He'll say something about a politician. He'll say something about a player. He'll go to a play with through the DeAndre. Was it DeAndre Jordan? Situation. I mean, all that stuff. So yeah, he gets a hall pass. I mean this respectfully. And I've met Mark a bunch of times after living in Dallas. Mark feels like Mark is. You know when you go into a building like Google, they're all open, they're 22-year-old kids. I feel like Mark's kind of like, he's still got that in him. There's something, I don't know what it is, but I expect it from him. I expect a $500,000 fine from him at some point during the season, and I expect it. But Mark's, quite frankly, smarter than Jim. Okay, and I'll leave it at that. Mark's a little more clever with his tweet.
I'm trying to like wrap my head around what the upside would even be, because like Jim Irsay is relatively benign, but if you look at Jed York's mentions, every single time he posts something, the guy just gets absolutely roasted, and rightfully so. Why would you want to go through that?
I just, you know what? When you have that kind of money and that kind of influence, people sometimes, you know what, we've all at one point in our life or sometime, it's like Hope Solo.
Yeah.
You know, she's a great player, but she seems to overload her mouth with her ass as much as they do on a regular basis. So, and trust me, I could raise my hand. I'm one of those that does stupid stuff. Like I've overloaded my mouth as well with stupidity, but I do know that in that position, we just look at him different. We just do. I just can't picture, you know, Chuck Knoll when he was a coach of Pittsburgh saying, "Yeah, I think I'm going to tweet out that I can't wait till this week. We're going to kick their ass." It just seems so weird. But you're right. We actually like about it. We like it when Mark does it, but we can't fathom if York or if Jim Irsay does it. So it is selective, but maybe it's just kind of the way when we look at them. Not a lot of people at times in the NFL, the Yorks have kind of, the 49ers and the Yorks, they've, you know, let Harbaugh go and all that, and then Jim Irsay's had his trouble off the field. And so, you know, it's selective and stuff, and Twitter can be used for a great reason. But if you're the owner, you ain't trying to get paid per tweet because you got enough money, so don't tweet. Just like I tell the moms of players, please, Joey Bosa, Mom, I know you love your son. Don't tweet.
Don't tweet.
Okay, don't. Just let it go. Tweet me, you're so happy he's a Charger when it's done. Don't tweet and tell him you said Eli Manning to my. Sometimes I just don't get it. We gotta slow it down and say, heck, my mom would look at me and kick me in the rear end if I did something. So she wouldn't say, son, don't only tweet. We're not tweeting. She would have told my dad the same thing. So there's time and a place for it, and I don't think an owner calling out somebody is probably the time or the place, to be quite frank with you, Jim Irsay.
Well, you kind of mentioned the 49ers there, too. And as much as I'd like to dive into how much parents have changed in general over the last 20 years of athletes, I do want to ask you about the Niners quarterback situation. And specifically, Colin Kaepernick didn't play at all on Sunday. I mean, I know this kind of seems crazy, but if he continues to sit out in the preseason, is there a chance that he doesn't make the roster?
If they're so, in my mind, if they're so blatant and not, I mean, if this is, and I haven't heard anything this morning, guys, and you guys are closer to it up there. There's no injury situation for this, correct?
It was arm fatigue. So not a real injury.
That's always a good one. My arm's tired too because I threw 8 passes to a kid over the weekend. But
hey, it's tough to throw bounce passes in the NFL, brother.
Right. I look at Andrew Luck or Drew Brees or Ben Roethlisberger. I get why they don't play in the first period. I wouldn't let Ben Roethlisberger take 15 snaps in the preseason.
Yeah.
He doesn't need it. I'd get him a few rhythm series and we get out. But Kaepernick's not in that rarefied air of quarterback. So if it is arm fatigue and we continue to see this and he's kind of just been put that deep into the doghouse, he won't make the team. They'll cut him. They're getting other guys a lot of work, and Driscoll, you know, got a little bit of work. I get it, but if this truly is arm fatigue and games 2 and 3, we see a lot of them, then he's back in the mix. So it is an odd situation there. They're not going to keep him if he's the third guy. I can tell you that. He will be gone. So if it really is arm fatigue and that's why he didn't play and then they're waiting, then we better see a bunch of them in game two, correct? I would imagine so, especially for a team. Just think about it, from DeBartolo and Carmen Policy and Joe and Jerry and even through Jim Harbaugh to now. Boy, do they got a lot of work to do. A great franchise, a historic franchise that makes football better. It's like when Michigan's good in football or Notre Dame, college football is better. And it's the same in the NFL. When we're talking about the 49ers as a bottom third feeder, it's like something's not right with that picture. So I'd love to get it turned around. It isn't going to be this year. But if Kaepernick's not the, at least in a competitive for number one, and is a solid number two, or if Gabbert or whatever doesn't play well, you're not keeping him on the roster as the three. So we'll see this week how true that arm fatigue question is and what Kaepernick's situation is for that team.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's – you're not inside the players' bodies and you're not a doctor, so you can't necessarily say, but
sure,
is
Nate?
There? Well, hey,
we
I
don't know
I,
where
listen,
he is.
I don't know.
It sounds like he might be a little bit inside there right now.
Like, with something like that, like shoulder fatigue, okay, is there an injury or something similar like that that's like a red flag to you as a former player that makes you call BS and be like, all right, guys, there's something more going on there?
Well, I go back to the days when I was a rookie and the Washington Redskins teams, and they kept like six quarterbacks. And the one thing they used to use then, it was back in the day when they wanted to hide a quarterback on the roster. We didn't have practice squads. Hey, Sean or Stan Humphries, when he was there, or Mark Rippon early on in their careers, they remember the Redskins, they keep like five quarterbacks because they didn't want them to go somewhere else and cut them, but they knew they weren't ready to play. So they called tendonitis. That's for tendonitis. Hey, Sean, you have tendonitis in your shoulder? No, I don't. Yes, you do. Oh, okay. Yeah, I got tendonitis in my shoulder as a rookie. So, that's even more competitive, man. Shoulder fatigue. As if Blaine Gabbert and the rest of the dudes weren't throwing the same amount of balls. It isn't. He's supposed to be the physical specimen. And it's just the whole. And you know what? Maybe if he does have arm fatigue, maybe that comment last year when he said, oh, I don't work on mechanics, I don't think mechanics matter, when Kaepernick gave us that, maybe it's the mechanics of his throwing motion is why he's not accurate, doesn't make the simple play, and has shoulder fatigue in the preseason after a full off season of throwing and trying to get himself ready. Maybe Colin Kaepernick needs to adjust his thought process and the way he approaches the quarterback position. Because I can tell you this, any quarterback who doesn't believe mechanics matter, they'll be over there holding the clipboard or sitting next to me the rest of the Sundays of their life. He better fix that. So it's a good one. And if it is shoulder fatigue, then we buy it. That's fine. Then we'll see him throw 20 balls this next week to make up for his shoulder fatigue in week one. So we'll see. The 49ers confuse me no matter what they do the last couple of years. So we'll see if that will continue this year.
Sean, always great stuff. We appreciate you joining us. I don't know if your phone's got some kind of, you know, a voice fatigue or something today, or a case of the Mondays, but hopefully next week we can get a little bit better connection for you. I don't know. Your phone sounds a little sleepy today, but good stuff from you as always.
Does it really?
Yeah, a little bit. Really? You know, I don't know. You sound like you might be underneath your pillow still. I'm not sure.
No, I wish I could say I was coaching yesterday, so it's probably a hoarse voice. I hope it's not staticky. I got a hoarse voice from coaching kids for about 4 hours yesterday.
That'll do it for you.
Hopefully you heard me okay. I appreciate you guys.
No, great stuff. We'll talk to you next week. We appreciate your time.
Thanks. Okay.
Thanks, Sean. Take care. That's Sean Salisbury. You can find him on Twitter at Sean Unfiltered.
And he is unfiltered.
Oh, no doubt about it. Even more
what
so
it,
than
what
we got him on here.
What was the phrase which I kind of want to steal it and use it about Hope Solo, how she's got a case of the
she
where
she fills her mouth with her ass.
Yeah.
Stealing that. That's the second time we've heard that. And I mean, there's always so much that it's why we have him on to talk football. We didn't talk entirely football.
Though.
What I really want, because I would have loved to ask him about Hope Solo and her thoughts on that, which we will cover here shortly.
Yeah.
I also, once he started talking about Joey Bosa's mom, I mean, I hate to go all, you know, get off of my lawn here, but that to me is just one of the silliest. Even spending like 1 year coaching high school football to see the helicopter parents now, where it's just your child can do no wrong. And I'm on Joey Bosa's side with this, but exactly.
Don't get involved.
Why, at what point did parents decide they needed to be involved?
One of the best things about my parents is that they came to support.
They didn't meddle. They weren't helicopter parents.
And it's like they probably knew very minuscule about sports, which means they were just there to cheer. They never opened their mouths. They were there to, you know, root on their baby girl. But God, this is getting a little insane with some of these parents.
We'll tell you about Hope Solo's ass mouth or whatever it is.
Maybe a little about Tim Duncan in the Olympics. We got something on that too.
Yeah, half hour remaining in the show. It's all when we return on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHTK.